Next on NPR's From the Top. The showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. And today, from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, our lineup of outstanding musicians includes a 13-year-old pianist playing Prokofiev and a 10-year-old violinist playing Bartok, and as you just heard, Vivaldi, accompanied in a very unusual way. Here's our host, renowned concert pianist Christopher O'Reilly.
Welcome, everybody. It's really great to be back in our hometown, Boston. And today, we have a rather special From the Top for you. We've presented lots of really, really great young musicians on this show before, but normally they're mixed in with a few, you know, really, really old musicians, like 17 or 18-year-olds, you know. But this week, it's all kids at the youngest end of the spectrum. Today, it's all kids from ages 10 to 13. And as you'll hear, they're all pretty amazing. So we're going to get started with the youngest of the young from New York City. Please welcome a terrific 10-year-old violinist, Alice Ivy Pemberton. Hi, Alice. Welcome to the show. Tell everybody what we're going to play together.
We're going to play Bartok Rhapsody No. 1, first movement.
Now, Alice, I got to tell you, we haven't had many 10-year-olds on this show playing Bartok. Well, actually...
Yeah, you get a lot of Vinyavsky,
lot of Vinyavsky, yeah. You knew. You've heard the show before. Okay. Anyway, we're thrilled you've got the Bartok.
Thank you.
And can't wait to play it with you. Let's take it from the top. Thank you. Alice Ivy Pemberton, our 10-year-old violinist from New York City playing Bartok. Thank you for making this a no Vinyovsky zone, Alice. But seriously, that Bartok is, it's so full of life and vigor and truth, really. You know, Bartok wrote so much of his music based on folk tunes
Yes.
Your parents are both anthropologists. Is that an advantage, would you say, to playing Bartok?
Oh, it can help sometimes.
Maybe. You actually like, when you're learning music, to experiment with all kinds of different things. Practicing on its own is sort of dull, so what sorts of things do you do to dress it up?
Well, I like to experiment in new ways, like interesting ways to make music more interesting and make it sound better. Like once I was in a concerto competition doing the Vivaldi Concerto in A minor, and I have this metronome called Dr. Beat.
Oh yeah.
And you can set it to all kinds of different tempos and
different kinds of beats too.
Yeah, different kinds of beats.
Yeah.
And I set it to a funk beat and played the Vivaldi to it, and it worked.
It helped. Of course we have to hear a little of this. You don't mind. We've asked you to bring your Dr. Beat out on stage with you. Would you mind? Let's hear it. Alice, that's brilliant. I mean, not only was the tempo right, but I guess, you know, adding Vivaldi to Dr. Beat, you end up with a multi-million dollar career. Vanessa May is like ready-made. Just like, that's all there is to it, I guess. That sounded lovely.
Thank you.
It probably felt pretty good. And did you insist on playing with Dr. Beat when you did the competition?
No, I wasn't allowed.
They probably weren't into that. It's still good to have in your head.
Yeah.
Now, as I said, both of your parents are professors at Columbia. Are there expectations of how you do with your academic studies sort of out of line? I mean, that must be very high pressure.
No, not at all. In fact, sometimes I have to tell them to do the work.
Ah. So they teach you at home, actually, I understand.
Yes, I'm homeschooled. And
so you know, they're arranging the curriculum, but you actually have fun watching them evaluate their students.
Yeah, when they do the midterms, I always sit around near them and I pick up who gets a C, who gets an A, who gets an A minus.
Really? And you smile very sweetly at them when they come to the door and you know what grades they got, and they're never the wiser. You're an evil child.
I like it.
They do one very professorial thing, though, which I admire. You don't have a TV at home. How does a 10-year-old survive without that?
I've never had it, so actually I really don't miss it or really want it or anything.
TV's vastly overrated, I agree with you.
Yeah, so, but I like old movies, and like I like Hitchcock, like North by Northwest.
Like really old movies.
Really old movies.
Usually when kids, you know, your age say old movies, they, you know, think like, you know, Risky Business or something, like 10 years old or something. No, but so North by Northwest, I'm a total Hitchcock fanatic. Is that your favorite one? Which one?
Well, I like North by Northwest and To Catch a Thief. Those are probably my favorite
ones.
Those
are really great ones.
Yeah.
Very sophisticated taste. So Cary Grant, any other Cary Grant movies?
Yeah, I like Cary Grant. Mr. Blanding Builds His Dream Home.
Yeah?
That's so funny.
Is it?
Yeah.
what they call a screwball comedy.
Yeah, I watch lots of screwball comedy.
That's a really good one because I've never seen that one.
It's good.
I'm taking film recommendations from a 10-year-old. That's good. And besides, who needs pop culture anyway, television, when you play the way you do? Obviously, you're spending your time wisely, and we're wildly appreciative of the way you're spending your time with us. And thank you for being with us, Alice.
Thank you.
Alice Ivy Pemberton, 10 years old, from New York City.
Podcasts from the top are available every week at npr.org/podcasts.
Each year, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation present 25 performers of exceptional musical ability, outstanding academic potential, and financial need with the $10,000 Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award. Learn more at fromthetop.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. And now our second really young player from New York. She's a 13-year-old pianist named Stella Wong. Stella, you've brought a devilishly difficult piece to play, one might actually say diabolical. What is it?
It is called Suggestion Diabolique by Prokofiev. And this is a very strong and rhythmic piece, and Prokofiev uses the piano like a percussion instrument, so some places in the piece remind me of grinding machinery. And I think of the movie Fantasia, and in it there's a piece called Night on Bald Mountain by Mussorgsky, and it is about the devil and demons. So when I play Suggestion Diabolique, I think of the devil as the scary king of hell and his creepy little demon servants.
Thank you for painting that Tarantino-esque picture for us. It's hard to reconcile with this very elegant young lady sitting at a piano, but we're very interested to hear how you play this piece. The stage is yours. After that, she steps in front of the piano, just pushes her glasses up a little bit, just not a hair out of place. It's pretty diabolical the way you play that piece, just profoundly sensational the way you play it, in fact.
Thank
Just
you.
Just a great pleasure to hear you play it. Hey, congratulations, Stella. You are one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists. That's wonderful. Thank you. And in getting this Prokofiev suggestion diabolique together, you've been reading about Prokofiev. Where did you read a whole book about him, or books about composers in general, or what were you reading?
I read a book called Lives of the Musicians.
Uh-huh. And what's the thing that really caught your eye about Prokofiev, about reading about him?
Well, as a child, Prokofiev would leave out the black keys in the pieces he played because he was scared of the black keys.
Ah, so later in life he went from the diatonic to the diabolic.
Yes. So until his early 20s, he would only write white music, which was music only with white keys.
That's right. And actually, I think he did something really astonishing for his graduation from conservatory. Tell everybody about that.
He played his first concerto at his graduation while all the other students who are graduating were playing Tchaikovsky's concertos. Yeah. So
Prokofiev First is a fantastic piece. It's just such a showcase for his great melodies and great technical writing. And
yeah, it's phenomenal. It's really hard. Last month I performed it at Steinway Hall in New York City. So
nice.
It's really hard piece.
Very exciting, very exciting. A very compact, a very compressed and concentrated 15-minute concerto.
Yeah.
It's a real good one. Audiences have short attention spans. It's good to keep in mind. Do you think knowing about Prokofiev's life helps you play his music better?
When he... a lot of his life, he lived through wars, so a lot of his music is very angry because of that.
Yeah.
So it does help me.
So you can hear that invested in, well, particularly, well, this is an early piece, but still that acerbic quality to his writing is there. But he was always a melodist. I mean, there's always a hint of melody, no matter how harsh or brutal it can get. It's always something I love about Prokofiev. But another influence, apparently, on your music making So that's music from The Barber of Seville, isn't it? But it sounded like it was from a cartoon, like a really old cartoon, right?
Well, I really loved the Tom and Jerry cartoons.
Oh, Tom and Jerry.
And this episode, Tom, who is a cat, he is singing The Marriage of Figaro, and Jerry is sleeping under the floorboards in the concert hall, so he wakes up because Tom's walking around and stomping on the floorboards, so he keeps sabotaging Tom's singing.
From underneath the stage.
Yeah, he drills holes and he pokes Tom.
Nice. It's always nice. It's amazing to think that cartoons were once made without action figures to sell around them. It's really amazing. Also amazing that there are some classical pieces like that Marriage of Figaro we just heard that were sort of part of the popular culture, and I'm afraid that isn't quite so true anymore. And now, what is this I was reading about you? You do practice diligently, I know, but you practice in your sleep?
Well, so I play 2 to 3 hours every night, so sometimes if I have a really exciting piece, after I go to sleep and my mom's still up, she looks over and sees me and I'm just practicing on the blankets.
And you're asleep. You don't remember any of this happening? Do you dream about practicing, or is it just something that your fingers do on their own?
Sometimes I dream about performing.
Yeah.
So it's a little extra practice.
Exactly. I like that. Well, obviously, practicing sleeping and waking has paid off big time for you. That Prokofiev was really just so splendid.
Thank you. Enjoyed it
so much and enjoyed speaking with you and being with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stella. Stella Wong, 13 years old, from New York City. Okay, now we have an 11-year-old to carry on with this cavalcade of young stars, ages 10 to 13. Please welcome, from very nearby Newton Highlands, Massachusetts, cellist Lev Mamuya. Lev, tell everybody what we're going to play together.
We're going to play the Kabalevsky Cello Concerto in G minor, third movement.
Thank you.
Kabalevsky, played for us by 11-year-old cellist Lev Mamuya from here in the Boston area. Very exciting piece. Wonderfully played.
Thank you.
Playing that with you. Tell us, Lev, about your musical beginnings. I know it's a long time ago, but... I know your grandmother was a cellist. Do you remember hearing her play, or what do you remember about that?
Not really, but I remember she used to have a cello, and when she would take it out, I would like to pluck on it, and at some point, I wanted to start, so.
At some point, meaning, like, how old were you when you asked for a cello?
About 3.
3 years old. And I don't think I could actually articulate, you know, Mom, could I have a cello at 3 years old? But so you asked for one and you got one?
I think.
A regular size cello or a little one?
One-tenth.
A 1/10 cello. Tell the truth. Is it any bigger than a violin, a 1/10 cello?
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah? Good for you, man. And so what are you playing now? I mean, it's as tall as you almost, this cello.
3/4.
So 3/4 cello. Get a big sound out of it, I'll tell you. Now, in addition to playing the cello, you're kind of a major sports freak. What do you like to play?
Yeah, I play baseball, basketball, football at recess, basically. Yeah,
anything with a ball, right?
Mm.
And but not only, you know, so and actually you're on your school's basketball team, right?
Yeah.
So you've got the height advantage, obviously. That's great. It's great, and you know, it's so seasonal. Whatever the season calls for, you're in there playing and pitching away. Now, but also you're a mega sports fan, not just playing, but what do you like to watch?
The Red Sox and the Patriots.
Oh, big surprise. They do pretty well these days, the Red Sox and the Patriots. So do you go to the games often?
I go to a Patriots game every year, and
nice.
Sometimes we go to Red Sox games, but not that often.
But it's all in the details for you, though, isn't it, Lev? Because you not only like sports and play sports, but you soak up a lot of the details, the trivia, the sports, the statistics. I mean, is that something you study? Do you pore over the sports pages, or is it just something that sticks in your head?
It just sticks.
Well, like, give me your favorite piece of... really arcane, really out-of-the-way trivia.
Everyone thinks Dennis Eckersley was the first Red Sox pitcher to win a Cy Young Award in the American League and the National League, but in fact it was Pedro Martinez.
It was Pedro Martinez. I wish I had talked to you earlier, because I've lost so many bar fights over that Dennis Eckersley thing. If only I had known, you know. Wouldn't have had my nose busted so many times. Okay, Lev, I want to test your sports trivia knowledge with a couple of rapid-fire questions about the Red Sox. You okay with that?
I guess.
Your game? He's probably gonna answer the question before I finish answering. Okay, what does this mean? Yuk.
They're cheering for Kevin Youkilis.
Kevin Youkilis, yes, exactly. What does he play on the Red Sox?
What? First base.
Oh, very good. Okay, name the last Red Sox player to win Rookie of the Year award.
Dustin Pedroia.
Without even taking a beat. People are going to think we edited this thing together so it would sound like you were real fast, but it's absolutely true. Isn't it true? It's true. He's getting these. Okay. What song is played before the bottom of the 8th inning at every Red Sox home game?
Sweet Caroline.
Wow. And finally, where is the game-winning baseball from the 2007 World Series?
It got chewed up by Papelbon's dog.
It's true. You nailed it. These are totally brand new questions. You totally aced it, man. Awesome. Now, talking about sports, physical activity, you pretty recently climbed Mount Kilimanjaro.
Well, a quarter of it.
A quarter of Mount Kilimanjaro. How did you end up in Tanzania?
My dad is from Tanzania, so I've been there twice. And
how do you like it? Is it exciting being
nice,
there?
It's nice, yeah.
And what's the thing that you remember most about your trip to Mount Kilimanjaro?
So when we got to our destination, we had lunch, and I had a hard-boiled egg and a Coke, and I remember my dad made me laugh, and I spit up the egg into the Coke.
It's the real thing. I think, you know, if I were climbing Mount Kilimanjaro and that happened, that would be the memory I take away from the place. No doubt, the snack stand now sells ready-made levs with hard-boiled egg in the Coke already, right? You're a trendsetter, as well as a brilliant cellist. Great having you on the program. Thank you for being with us, Lev. Lev Mamouya, 11 years old, from Newton Highlands, Massachusetts.
Welcome back to the radio showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, From the Top. This week we're coming to you from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. New England Conservatory, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Coming up, more fantastic young musicians, all 13 years old and younger, including a piano trio from New York City performing Haydn. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Our next young musician is a 13-year-old composer who comes from way out in the Wild West. Well, not too wild, actually, unless your idea of wild is poetry readings and fair trade coffee. We're talking about the west of Massachusetts. South Hadley, Massachusetts. Anyway, this talented young composer, he's a violinist too, and From the Top's 15-year-old roving reporter, Emily Mayer, got together recently to talk about how a kid like Matthew gets the music he hears in his head down on paper.
So this is what your music actually sounds like when you finish putting it in the computer?
Yep, yeah. It's not as good as a real thing, but it's the closest you can get.
Now, did you actually compose all of this directly onto the computer?
No, when I compose, I sit at the piano and write everything out by hand, and it's not the most economical process, but it's good, and I feel sort of connected to my music, and I like the process.
So that sounds like it could be a little tedious. Do you enjoy it?
Well, not the writing down by hand. That's not too much fun. What's fun for me is thinking up the music and sort of getting it all together in my head before actually having to sit down and write it out as best I can.
So we're about to hear your vignettes for piano trio played. Do you get to hear your music played like that a lot?
No, it's really difficult, especially as a young composer, to get music played and get it played well. But when it does, and when it's played very well, it's wonderful.
Now, how different is it to hear it played by real musicians instead of the computer?
It's to hear it played by real musicians, there's such a level of expression and musicianship that's there when you can't hear in the computer. I mean, when I listen to the MIDI files of my pieces, I just have to take a step back and realize when I listen to musicians play, it's going to be so different, and I have to take all that with a grain of salt.
Now, after you hear it played by real musicians, do you ever go back and change it?
Well, my pieces have been played so infrequently by real musicians, I've never had the chance to go back and actually rewrite things, but I think if I were to, there's definitely, especially in this piece, and there's definitely some things I'd like to go back and change, make better.
Anything in particular you want to change?
Well, I did happen to write a note that doesn't exist on the piano, and it would be a good idea if I were to change it, or manufacture a new piano that has that note.
How'd you manage to write a note that doesn't exist on the piano?
When I wrote this, I did happen to write it at a piano, but obviously I wasn't using the piano when I wrote it. It's it's an ascending pattern, and I was just following the pattern and not thinking about the possibility of the high D on the piano, and or is it a C sharp? But it was interesting because I didn't even think about it when I wrote it. It just happened that way.
Now, I hear you're a violinist yourself. Are you ever tempted to sit down and play your own pieces?
You know, I've always been very, really not wanted to play my own music. It's hard to pinpoint why, but probably just stems from the fact that, you know, as a composer and playing my own music, it's almost as if I'm expected to bring in my own, the exact way I imagine it, and being a musician and not an exceptionally talented one at that, I don't think I'd be able to do that. And on some level in my mind, I don't think I'd be able to fill those expectations that I set for myself in it. I'd get very frustrated. I've tried before and it's not fun. I just enjoy listening to other people and what they do with it.
Now, are you at all nervous about hearing the trio play your piece? Because you've never heard them, have you?
Well, no, actually, I haven't heard them, so it's going to be interesting to hear them with, you know, what they do with their piece. I mean, I like listening because, you know, beforehand, I'm not nervous at all, like, right before the concert, no nervousness. But before, when people have played their piece, I find myself getting really nervous and, like, oh, were they going to mess up? Or were they going to, you know, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? And it's silly because, you know, I'm not up there. I'm not doing anything. But it's, I do feel that nervousness, like I'm going in to play it myself.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me. I can't wait to hear your piece, and I can't wait to hear the trio.
Now let's meet our 13-year-old composer, Matthew Woodard. So Matthew, when you wrote that, it must have been on the computer or something already when you were writing that note that doesn't exist on the piano. What happened? Did your dog bark or something?
Well, no, actually, I wasn't writing at the computer either, which is the silly part. I was actually writing it at the piano.
On paper and just kind of let it go.
Yes.
Well, we should get that piano built,
I think. Yes, I do think.
I think it would look nice with a nice high C sharp up there. Now, so Matt, should we give the kids a chance to play your piece? We'll bring them out on stage?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Sounds good. From all around New York City, we have 12-year-old Anna Lee on violin. Our cellist is 13-year-old Taeguk Moon. Our pianist is 11-year-old Alice Berla. They're all students at the Juilliard Prep Division. Please welcome the Maggiore Trio. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Seeing as you haven't seen ninth grade yet, I'm assuming you've been playing a lot of contemporary music?
No.
No. Is this your first time playing any music by a living composer sitting in the same room with you?
Yeah, it's my total first time.
Wow. Pretty exciting, don't you think?
Yeah.
Does he answer your questions pretty handily about what he wants?
I think he does a pretty good job.
He knows what he wants. I think he's just being very modest about his violin playing as far as, you know, getting the stuff on the page. But what have you guys talked about concerning getting to know the imagery behind this piece? Do you find it something that lends itself to thinking about in imagistic sort of ways?
Well, the first movement is called Spring, and in the music, Matthew wrote, it's supposed to be like waking up, so we imagined like a sunset. I mean, sunrise. Sunrise.
A night
over
owl,
the beach.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're waking up, you're like really, really like tired, and you're like, I don't want to wake up. It's the beach.
Nice.
Yeah.
I thought it was gonna be like a vampire waking up at sunset. That'd be exciting.
Yeah.
And Alice, what's the second piece called?
I imagine the second movement, it's called The Wind and the Waves, like a tsunami wave.
Oh.
And like rising higher and higher and covering everything on its path and being really violent.
Real voice of nature there. Well, Matthew, will you please give the official introduction to your piece?
Sure. The Maggiore Trio will be performing from five vignettes for piano trio, two movements, one Le Printemps and two Le Vent et les Vagues.
Thank you. We heard two movements from the Vignettes for Piano Trio by our composer in residence today, 13-year-old Matthew Woodard. It was performed for us by the Maggiore Trio.
No. The Maggiore Trio. Maggiore!
Buona.
Italian, no?
Of course, Anna. How cruel of me to butcher your name like that. The Maggiore Trio.
Yes,
it pains me. I can smell the garlic just seeing it. Anna, thank you so much.
No problem.
I appreciate that. Did I turn pages okay? Alice would be too polite to tell me if I did a bad job. You would be on me, though. Right? Like a shot.
It was okay.
It was okay? I still have one more piece to mess up, don't I? She makes me so nervous. We're going to get to know the members of this trio now. They have some Haydn to play in a few minutes. But first, Matthew, how did they do on the vignettes?
I think they did very, very well.
I thought so. And I'm curious, you know, you were speaking in the interview about, well, you were very modest about your own violinistic talents, and you say that you compose at the piano, and I might say I really was admiring of the sonorities and the chords that Alice had to contend at the piano. It makes a very nice sound on all three of the instruments.
Thank you very much. But you
are reluctant to play your own pieces.
Right, I do. In some ways, I feel like it would almost detract from the performance, because in some ways my performance would be sort of my projection of my own piece and my own I wouldn't be taking it. It's sort of like a part of the piece is lost, in that when I have other people play my music, there's another level of creativity and artistry that's added. And if I were to play my own music, I think that level would become it would become part of the music itself, instead of it wouldn't become its own piece. It would stay something of.
It sounds like you're writing the piece, but then you're sending it off like a boat or something to have sort of its own life. Your compositions show a wide and deep well of expression, and it's been great having you on the show and having your piece played.
Thank you very much.
Keep up the great work, Matthew.
Thanks for
being with us.
Matthew is a participant in our Young Composer Project, which brings kids who are writing music together with prominent professional composers for one-on-one mentoring sessions. Learn more about our Young Composer Project at fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jackkentcookfoundation.org, and that's Cook with an E. Chris.
Thank you, Joanne, and that's Joanne with an E. We're speaking to members of the very young Maggiore trio.
Yes, si.
Taeguk, you're a brave soul to come on national radio. How long have you been in this country from Korea?
I came here like almost 5 months ago.
5 months ago?
Yeah.
Just that recent?
Yeah.
So you must think, you know, just come to the country, just get on national radio. Right away, right? Good deal, right?
Yeah.
Seriously, though, are you enjoying studying in the States?
Yeah.
You're at Juilliard. You came over to be at Juilliard, yes?
Yeah.
Well, very, very glad to have you, and specifically having you on this show to play these wonderful pieces. Playing Matt's piece, you guys, you three sounded so together, but it doesn't necessarily come naturally. I mean, are you three chamber music players by habit, or is this a first, Anna?
Oh, well, I think it's harder because, well, when you're a soloist, like, everyone has to follow you. You're like the main person.
And you're all soloists, right? I mean, we've
yeah,
heard
and
Alice,
you know, we've you all guys, yeah. kind of trained yeah. to be soloists. But yeah. then when we do chamber music, we have to really see what the other person wants. Mm-hmm. And you can't be like the only star. Like that light up there. So.
It's tough. What does your coach tell you to do?
Well, she told us to, you know, listen to each other and really try to mind read the other person. But
mind reading.
It was a bit hard.
How do you do the mind reading? What helps with the mind reading in a chamber group, would you say?
It's basically the whole just music, what you think about and how you think the music will go somewhere, you know, directions and phrasings.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And even like, you know, melodic and harmonic intonation. So it's all different that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
How about body English? Or Alice, you were saying you not only had trouble listening to these two, you had trouble with something else.
Yeah, one time during chamber coaching, our teacher, Ms. Combs, told us to show the face of the character that we were playing in Haydn. And we started playing with really dead faces. And at the end of the class, we were all, our faces were tomato red, and Ms. Combs had fallen out of her chair.
Just too hilarious.
Laughing. Yeah. She ping, down on the chair.
Took a nosedive.
Yes.
Can we see the dead face?
Yeah, sure.
Alice? Oh, that's that's great. That looks like Bruckner, actually. Well, Alice, would you do me a favor and introduce the piece you're going to play to take us out of this fine program?
We're going to play the third movement from Haydn's Piano Trio No. 1.
An extraordinarily upbeat way to end our show. I want to thank all of our great young performers today, and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week, and Maggiore Trio, you can take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. Musical direction by Tom Vinieri with Caroline Cardias-Menos. Our tour producer is David Balsam, and our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette with Dan Hallis, Joe Rivers, and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.